You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Life of an Accounting Droid. I'm your host, as always, Neil, bringing you episode number 6. For this week's episode, there were a lot of things are going on this week. A lot of updates, changes, additions to existing services. Yet another flip phone in the smartphone category. So I will jump right into it. But all in all, the general idea and theme that I got through all of it was everything having their own competitive advantage to have a leg up compared to other related services, other tools, features, and all of that stuff in the tech market. And then even with the quick tip that I do this, or I'm doing this for this week's episode. So not your traditional, for 5 episodes, but app reviews and game reviews that I've done. In this case, it's a tip in that feature that is hopefully handy when you're out and about going to your local businesses. And then with the same thing with the film review, as far as what an alternative agency can provide as far as the idea behind the movie, and same thing with this week's Star Wars profile. So that is, of course, for after the break. Before the break, I will jump into an overview of what the theme is and the Android and competitor news. So to start it off, a competitive advantage is generally defined as a business concept where a business outperforms its competitors in one or more attributes. These attributes or features or abilities can be things like their access to resources, geographical location, personnel, time to market, things like that, maybe even back-end resources, any sort of thing like that. In the economic perspective, things like labor is not generally considered, but depending on how it's implemented, it can also be considered a competitive advantage. Doing things more efficiently, doing things better, faster, sometimes even slower, can provide that advantage based on how it's perceived in the market. So with that, I will jump into this week's Android news. A number of interesting things going on, so I'll jump right into it. So to start it off, Android Studio version 1.3 was released. It adds a few new tools, including C++ editing and debugging, performance and testing tools, Android memory viewing, APK testing in modules, and a lot more things. So performance and bug fixes, of course, but a few other things, but these were the items of note. In other news, MIUI version 7 is set to be announced on August 13th, so look out for that. Essentially, it's going to be their next iteration of their OS based on Android. LinkBubble got an update this week. A couple of things are interesting things about this story, but the app itself got updated with Material Design and support for domain redirects. One other cool thing is that now you have the ability to theme the bar of LinkBubble based on the icon set from the website, or from the website's icon, in case they do have it. So a little bit of theming there as well. The other news, though, is that the developer of the app has sold it off to a company due to time constraints and his ability, knowing that the app can do so much more. At the moment, the company he sold it to has requested to keep the news private. They will be making it public when it's ready with their features and updates and anything of note as soon as it's ready. But look out for that in case you're wondering, in case development halts for a little bit. But basically look out for that update coming soon. But in any case, if you do use LinkBubble, it now has a more Material Design and unified look and feel. In other news, though, Chrome Beta version 45 was released. It now has support that was announced at Google I/O for developers to add a pop-up Chrome window within their app rather than opening a separate browser window outside the app. So this kind of makes it easy in case a developer wants to add a page that's not necessarily part of the app, or let's say it's a payment processing screen that can't be included. But in any case, the user does not have to leave the app. They can check what they're doing and get back to the app and finish whatever they're working on. LG announced a new phone this week. This is the flip phone that I mentioned earlier. It's called the Wine Smart. It runs Android 5.1, has a 3.2-inch screen, a 1.1 gigahertz quad-core processor, 4 gigs of storage, 1 gig of RAM, and a 3-megapixel rear camera. So not necessarily a high-end smartphone, but probably it would probably be considered a low-end smartphone, but a mid-to-high-range not smartphone. But at least it's running Android 5.1, and it's in the flip phone style in case you want a traditional phone, but want a modern operating system. In other news, though, Google announced that Google Fiber is expanding into San Antonio, so look out for their gigabit internet coming soon. For those of you who are wondering about the stage fright bug, Google announced this week that all Nexus devices are going to get an update to fix it, so look out for that. And they also announced, in addition to Samsung, that their devices will be getting monthly security updates for their devices up to 3 years. So look out for that. So kind of like a Windows update style where Microsoft has Patch Tuesday, but think of it like Android. So as any new bugs and issues are found, they will be patched every month to keep Android as secure as possible. Google Keep got an update this week to now have the ability to export your notes to Google Docs. I had a chance to quickly test this out. So if you select one or more notes, you'll get a option in the hamburger menu. So when you select the note or multiple notes, you do click the three dots at the top right of your screen and select copy to Google Docs. And then when you go to Google Docs, you'll now see a sheet with your notes in there. So if you've created a list of notes or things you need to do or want to back them up, get them out of Google Keep, then you can copy them over into Google Docs and have it backed up there. If you do select multiple notes to back up, it'll all be copied into one note or one document, and then it won't necessarily have much formatting, but you will see the title of your note and then any notes that relate to it underneath, so you have that kind of differentiation there. In other Google Drive news, though, Google Slides got an update to have the ability to present slides to Hangouts video calls from any Android device. So if you are on a Hangouts call, you can start sharing your slides immediately from your device. You don't have to be in front of a computer or have any other things specially set up. YouTube got an update, or more of a back-end update, but it's no longer going to be showing the 301 plus views on any new videos. They explained this as originally having to have that show up while they make the initial differentiation between real views and robot views, but now that their back-end is updated by that much, they no longer need that, so you'll get a more accurate count right off the bat. Chromecast got an update, or not necessarily Chromecast, but two apps at least got an update this week to now support Chromecast, and that is HBO Now and the Food Network. So in case you watch or have a subscription with either one of those channels, you can now cast directly to your Chromecast. The Disneyland app this week was released for Android. It was a previously iOS-only release. It is currently only available in the United States, or it was released for United States and Japan users, or users in Japan, so look out for that. So it'll help you with ride times, buying tickets and passes, and show times and all of that good stuff. Microsoft this week released their Microsoft Translator app for Android. It's the same similar service as the Bing Translator, so look out for that. I tried it really quickly. It is a pretty nifty UI. It's very straightforward as well. You touch the keyboard or the microphone and you can start translating right away. The one thing that kind of bummed me out for this is that they didn't include Klingon in it, so maybe it'll come in a future update, but when I see that, that'll make it that much more awesome. And finally, Lara Croft Go is set to release on August 27th. It'll also be coming to iOS, so if you're a fan of the Lara Croft games, then look out for that. But that is all for that, so now I will jump into the notable tech news for this week. So to start it off, if you're thinking about buying an Amazon Echo, but you've wanted to take a look at it first, play with it, see how it looks and feels in your hands, it is now available exclusively on Staples, or at Staples, so look out for that. Initially, it looks like it's only available on the website, but when I visited a little bit before recording the show, it might be available in stores as well, but It is at the moment a Staples exclusive, as far as I can tell. Twitter this week got an update by adding 4 new languages, including Gujarati, Kannada, Marathi, and Tamil. These are 4 Indian languages, so it should make it that much more easier and localized for Indian users to use Twitter. For those of you who shop at Macy's, they've added same-day delivery in 17 cities as a beta test to see how well they work. So if you're in one of those 17 cities, then it may be worth checking out, especially if you want your deliveries from Macy's to come the same day. Nokia made a surprise announcement this week in that they're selling their HERE maps to a German consortium of car manufacturers, which includes Audi, BMW, and Daimler. They're selling it for $3 billion. At the moment, it should not affect the mobile version of the mapping service, so that is probably a separate thing that I didn't hear too much about. But in related news, HERE Maps is being expanded into more countries, including Belarus, Barcelona, and Brazil, so look out for that. I'm guessing that they're going to speculation, but they're probably going to keep the back-end service and transition it over slowly to the manufacturers, more for the car integration more than anything else. In other Amazon news, though, Amazon has released the Alexa voice service for developers, so developers can include the voice and learning technology for Amazon's Alexa into their web-connected devices. This week, Dr. Dre announced that Compton, a soundtrack, I believe it's a soundtrack to the NWA movie, is releasing this week as an Apple exclusive album. As part of Apple Music, so if you do have an iOS device or you use Apple Music and iTunes, then check it out. I believe the release date is August 7th, so by the time you guys hear this episode, it should already be out, so it might be worth taking a listen to, especially to get the album. I can't wait for it to be on other platforms or Apple Music to come to Android so I can listen to it as well. In other Microsoft news, though, or only the first Microsoft news, Microsoft Outlook for iOS got an update this week to now support Apple Watch, so you can now get your email notifications on your watch as well. And for the final Amazon news for this week, Amazon Prime Now 1-hour delivery has expanded to Birmingham, Alabama, and surrounding areas, so if you live in that area, then you can now get faster delivery for your select Amazon goods. For those of you who use 500px to share your pictures, the iOS app got updated with higher resolution images and an updated layout to have a more Instagram style experience. So if you want to share higher resolution images or you want your followers to get your higher resolution images, this may be the way to go. I didn't see anything on the Android front as far as if they're going to do the same thing for the Android side, but I hope they do. They do have their official app, so it's probably coming soon. For those of you who you are on iOS 9, Beta 5 was released this week, so look out for that. It has additional bug fixes and things like that. But it was also found that as part of iOS 9 that it's going to be getting a smarter connection switching feature between Wi-Fi and mobile data. So if you lose your Wi-Fi connection, it should seamlessly translate to mobile data, and as far as I can tell, vice versa as well. If you're an iOS developer who's wanted to release for a Windows Phone, or a Windows Phone developer who's wanted to help translate iOS apps to Windows Phone, Windows Bridge for iOS was released this week. It's a program application to help you convert iOS apps to Windows Phone native apps. As far as I can tell, it converts everything on the back end, and if there's any issues, you just have to worry about fixing those issues, and then you can adjust your layout and code from there. And finally, the EFF released an extension this week called Privacy Badger for Google Chrome and Mozilla Firefox. What it does is it blocks spying ads and invisible trackers to help you have a more safer web surfing experience. If you're wondering how it differs from AdBlock or any other ad blocking software, they say that it takes it a step further and are more... I don't know, I guess I'm not really sure how to say it, but they're more transparent and more ubiquitous as far as how they block ads and tracking sites. So rather than having that custom, or actually I should put it this way, whereas AdBlock and other related sites have to take you to the step-by-step process of picking filter lists and blocking that way based on region, yet the EFF Privacy Badger extension blocks it uniformly across the web, so you don't have to worry about where you're going, what site you're looking at. It blocks it universally, so you don't have to worry about configurations or anything like that. It just blocks ads and tracking sites. So I'm actually going to give it a shot, see how well it works. I think I tried it out when it was back in its early release, back when it came out a while back. I want to say a few months ago. But now that it's in full release, I want to see if anything's changed, if it's gotten better or worse, or see how much better or worse it is compared to AdBlock. But that is all for that. So after the short break, I will jump right into this week's quick tip, film review, and Star Wars profile. Life of an Accounting Droid is brought to you by you, because you can now help and support the show in three awesome and excellent ways. The first is by simply visiting patreon.com/patelN01 and check out some of the great milestone goals and rewards you get by simply donating as much as you're able, be it $1, $5, $20, whatever you feel comfortable with, to help the show expand in ways like adding more posts to the feed, an Android app, and removing ads, that sort of thing. So definitely check it out. That's patreon.com/patelN01. You can also get some great deals and discounts by visiting geek-io.net/support. You can get discounts on Tweaked Audio headphones, so you get some great audio while you listen to podcasts, movies, music, whatever have you. Or even by getting a discount on great security software provided by ProXPN. So definitely check that out. It's definitely worth your while, especially if you're on the geeky, nerdy side of things. Especially if you want to show that fandom and geekiness by wearing a t-shirt provided by T-Fury. So that's geek-io.net/support. Now, finally, let's say you love this show, you want to hear more and listen to more shows like it, you can visit patreon.com/geekio. Or visit geek-io.net and check out more shows like this and help support the network, help it expand and grow, help us host, do more and provide you with more and continued great content. That's patreon.com/geek-io. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show. Welcome back to the episode, everybody. So to start it off, this week is going to be a little bit different. I know past reviews have been app reviews and game reviews, but sticking with the theme of competitive advantage, one of my favorite new features, at least in the past year to year and a half, has been Google Now for Android. An update to the how Google Search works on at least Android, and even in the Google Search app for iOS, but they keep adding features and abilities and kind of plugins for how it interacts with apps. So it does a whole bunch of different things. It has a whole bunch of different features. But recently they added I believe it came out last week, I may have mentioned it, but over the past week or so, they released a new feature, they meaning Google, that's part of Google Now. I will get into more of its cross-platform abilities in a bit. But its ability to check how busy a store is using Google Now. So essentially, let's say you want to go to the store, but you're kind of in a rush, or you want to see how busy they generally are, Google Now can provide that information to you, on the Android side at least. So what you'll do is you'll look up a store and select a location. So the link in the episode guide, I looked up In-N-Out in Las Vegas. And if I'm in Vegas and I want a quick meal, I want to go to In-N-Out. But being Vegas, I imagine that it's always busier. I want to get a general idea of what the best time to go is. So I'll pick the location I want to go to. And from there, when you scroll down a little bit, you'll see a general idea of busy times. It's generally based on collected data. So the number of people probably who have the smartphones in their pocket, people who do searches for In-N-Out at that location. And it's all put together in a graph. By default, it will show the day of the week that it is. So, for example, if the day is Wednesday. It's going to by default show you Wednesday. So you get a general idea based on their opening and closing hours, how busy that location is, and you can plan your trip accordingly. Let's say you're planning to go on another day. Let's say you want to go tomorrow, for example. Then you can go to that day by swiping the graph. You can go left to right or right to left. And then you can also pick the day from a menu in case you want to hop around. Let's say today is Wednesday and you're planning for Saturday. Then you can pick the menu and go jump straight to Saturday, for example, and get that graph. This feature is not yet available for all locations, but it is rolling out. So if I did a search for Best Buy near my home and then In-N-Out, a few other locations, then I did, I think, like the Stratosphere and things like that. So not all. So the Best Buy and In-N-Out worked. The Stratosphere, the Fry's, and a couple other places didn't work. So it was probably a slow rollout. And they also need the data to provide or to generate that information. So as they get more information, it will show up. But it's a pretty nifty feature. So if you want to plan dinner even or plan an event at a particular location, then you can get that information. So as I mentioned, this, I tested it on Google Now for Android. It works natively. There's no update needed. It'll just start showing up. For other platforms, though, it will be or it is available via the mobile web. So if you do a Google search and you for a particular location and pick it, then it will show up that way. So iOS, Windows Phone, BlackBerry, Nokia, other platform users are not left out, but it is a little bit more of a roundabout process, especially if you want to just do a search. So something to consider there, but a pretty nifty feature at that. So that's all for that. As I mentioned, there'll be a link in the episode guide if you want to see a video preview on how it looks on Android, and a walkthrough there as well as a brief video, a couple of minutes or so. Pretty nifty in case you have trouble or if you're not sure if you're doing it right or anything like that, then hopefully that video helps as well. But also on the flip side, not all locations are available, so not every place may have this graph just yet. But look out for it. I'm sure more and more locations will be added as the data is included. So that is all for that. So this week's film review is actually partly by accident because I didn't really know too much of it going in, but it seems to work well as far as competing forces and one agency having a more of an ability over another, is the movie Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. So I had a chance to watch it last weekend. I didn't know too much about it aside from the brief description of one agency wanting to take over another, and my end impressions of it actually were kind of surprising to me because I didn't expect to have that happen or have that thought kind of or make that relationship, but it didn't take away from the movie at all either. So with that, I'll jump right into it. To start it off, the movie released in the United States on July 31st, 2015. Its runtime is approximately 131 minutes, so a little over 2 hours. There are certain slow points where it did seem kind of slow, and I was wondering how far into the movie we were, but it actually picks up and keeps on going after those spot moments. Summary of the movie, though, is that Ethan and a team take on their most important or most impossible mission yet, eradicating the Syndicate, an international rogue organization as highly skilled as they are, committed to destroying the IMF. So a pretty interesting summary of that to me. I didn't really read it before going into the movie, just kind of what I pieced together from the trailers, but this actually would have provided more insight or more of a direction for the movie, but for me didn't really take away from the movie at that, really, because I know what a Mission Impossible movie is going to entail in general, and early on I kind of see where they're going with the movie. So and then for me it was the bookstore scene. When you get to that in the movie, you'll kind of see what I mean, but from there it worked for me. So the movie on IMDb is getting, or at the last time I checked, is getting a rating of about 81% on IMDb, so generally well-favored. On Rotten Tomatoes, it's even better, 93% critic rating and 92% audience rating. So overall, pretty good. I was talking to someone in the movie theater before it started, and someone made the joke about how short-haired Ethan Hunt Mission Impossible movies are the better ones. We didn't really get a chance to go too much in depth into Mission Impossible 2, but he found it the lesser of the movies, and all the other ones, I guess he had long or short hair, so that's why they were good. I haven't had a chance to back up that claim, but I found it particularly funny. But in any case, with that, I will jump into the review. So, at what point do we have Ethan Hunt and James Bond work on all the spy missions together? So, essentially, while watching this movie, I did think about something else, which I'll jump to or talk about in my closing review. But basically, we're getting to the point, it seems, of with the Mission Impossible movies, at least, that it's kind of like the American version of a James Bond movie. At the moment, we have Tom Cruise playing all the character or the same character, but in future movies, are we going to kind of go Jason Bourne, where we have someone else take the mantle who can pull it off? First person who comes to mind is Jeremy Renner, just because he has played a part in the Bourne movies. But at what point do we have them work together? Also, because there was a British agent, or the British agencies work in collaboration in this movie, so at what point do they start working together or do go on parallel missions, kind of along the lines of Casino Royale, and work together that way? And I figured it was an interesting concept to have a super movie that way. Next up, though, I think the IMF is a working incarnation of Project Blackfriar. So, with Jeremy Renner in the movie and all the crazy stunts that are put into the Mission Impossible movies, I got to thinking that maybe that's kind of the role they're gonna take. Forget making more Bourne movies, but instead merge them into Mission Impossible movies and have the crazy stunts, crazy visual, well, not necessarily visual effects, but have all the crazy stunts in various locations and go nuts that way. Next up, though, was a kind of a funny moment for me, but kind of one of those things that took me out because of the statement that seemed out of his times, but calling a flash drive a disk is like calling a text message a telegram. At some point, it isn't used as a point of common reference. So, we have Ethan Hunt, I forgot which point, but it was after they get the flash drive that had all the information that they needed, but he calls it a disk, and I guess technically a flash drive is a portable disk. But for me, it took me out a little bit just because calling it at least for me, it would have been better if it was called a portable disc. But calling it just a disc seems kind of out of place. For me, it kind of reminded me, or in my mind, it kind of more reminds me of a floppy disc, like how they had in the first Mission Impossible movie. So it's probably more semantics on my part, but it took me out a little bit because I was like, wait, that's a flash drive, not a disc. And then, but I guess calling it a portable disc is kind of not really displaying it very well. I don't know how many people, for example, consider a flash drive as a portable disc or who uses which terminology more or less than the other, but it kind of took me out because it's a whole text message, telegram, or phone call kind of thing where it's calling it one thing versus another. It all depends on how far removed we are from the original use of the word. So for me, at least, it took it out of the took me out of the movie a little bit, just calling it a disc. But it kind of bugged me in the end as well, that how long are we going to actually just be calling it a disc, that it's still the common point of reference no matter what kind of device we're using. But finally, at what point do spies and villains assume that their closest ally or top underling is a double agent and working with that angle? So I figure after all these years, all these villains, all these allies, the good guys, the bad guys, have been double-crossed by double agents, whether if you're a good guy, by your top underling, if you're a bad guy. And at what point do they sit down and think, okay, well, if I'm going to be working with someone else, I have to do more than just take their word or have one or two events happen that I can trust them. So why not play up that angle a little bit more, where the top guy doesn't trust his underling that much or provides them with certain missions to have certain tasks done, but to keep the key work done himself, because that it is of that much importance, or that he knows that it's possible no matter what to be double-crossed. So
I don't know. To me, it just seemed like we're the double agent or the being double crossed by the underling is kind of getting repetitive to the point where someone should have figured it out by now and doesn't trust anybody else or prefers to keep their partner at arm's length. So that is all for that. So my general review of Mission Impossible, or my general impressions, is that it is a good movie. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was very entertaining, kept me going throughout the movie. Definitely worth checking out, especially if you're a fan of the Mission Impossible movies. If not, if you're a fan of Tom Cruise, then definitely check it out. But my only, I don't want to say problem, but the point that bothered me a little bit was that I want to say probably halfway to three-fourths through the movie, it actually started reminding me a lot of the trailer for Spectre. I don't know why, if maybe the Mission Impossible trailers didn't do it for me, but at some point I got to thinking that this seems like the exact same plot and issue that they're going to bring up in Spectre, or whereas in Mission Impossible it was more of one agency versus another, and the guy of the syndicate here was going after, I want to say Ethan Hunt, just because he's one of the last guys who's going after the syndicate. But and then in Spectre we have the villain taking it more on a personal level with James Bond. But I couldn't help but think to myself that the parallels between the trailer for Spectre and the movie for Mission Impossible seemed like a general transplant of each other, where they could be interchanged. So I actually can't wait to see Spectre to see how similar or different they are. So we'll see how it goes. It's not taking away from Mission Impossible or from Spectre yet, but it was just a random thought that kind of popped into my head, and I was like, I don't know why I didn't think of this sooner or didn't realize it sooner, but it seems like the stories for the two movies might be very similar. So that is all for that. Otherwise, over the past week, I started watching season 3 of American Horror Story. So American Horror Story Coven. I may have started it right around last week. I'm about halfway through right now, around episode 7 or 8. So probably in the next week or so, I should be done with that, and then I can start getting to work on season 3 of Boardwalk Empire. There was something else that I wanted to watch as well that started coming up, but I can't think of it at the moment. Otherwise, I have been watching or continuing to watch Hell on Wheels and Falling Skies. I don't know if you guys are interested in that, but I've been watching those shows since the beginning. I really like them a lot, especially Hell on Wheels. I like westerns. Falling Skies is a good post-apocalyptic story. So both have kept their stories going really well. So definitely worth watching. I think Hell on Wheels is in season 5, and Falling Skies I think is around season 3 or 4, somewhere around the same time frame, but definitely worth checking out. So that is all for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's Star Wars profile. So this week, on the science Star Wars side, when I was getting to think what I could review that really covered a competitive advantage, what gives something an advantage over something else, and why it might be a better platform or usage, and what came to mind was the HoloNet in Star Wars. And I got to thinking that I actually don't know that much about it, like the back end, how it was set up, why it was set up, and all of that stuff. So I did my research. So with that, I'll jump right into it. Essentially, the HoloNet at its core is a galaxy-wide communications grid. It provides near instantaneous communications at near light speed, so that's why it was able to transmit that much better. And it's also probably why, because of the light speed part of it, that things like an asteroid belt, as we saw in Empire Strikes Back, might interfere with HoloNet communication. So as long as there's very little in the way, the communication can be sent and received as clear as possible. It was originally commissioned by the Galactic Senate because previous communications were done through a bunch of relay stations and third-party means of communications, and they wanted an easier way to transmit communications across the galaxy. So essentially, on the HoloNet, messages are broadcast from a device at the point of origin through hyperwave transmitters that are connected to the HoloNet relay. So basically, on each planet, every ship, anything like that, will have a hyperwave transceiver or a HoloNet relay. So planets generally have the relays, and ships and things like that have transceivers. If it's a planet, it's probably going to be a mix of both. But essentially, when you're at that station, you can transmit a message based on where it's going. It'll transmit through the net. It's kind of like a mesh network. So it'll transmit across the network. And because it has all those connections, it can transmit right away. Kind of like a torrent setup where files can be transferred more easily if there's a whole network setup. So the more points of connection, the faster it goes. The system itself was very hard to hack as well. One would think that because of the way it's set up, it's hard to hack. But the communications are set up to travel through narrow hyperspace dimensions called S-threads. So these are kind of like tunnels through the space that allow it to transmit the information. So because they're very thin and very strong, it's hard to get a lock on them and then hack into them. So we don't see very many cases where this would be an issue, and it's hard to hack through the hyperspace dimensions. The only way to hack into the HoloNet, though, was to use or to be at a hyperwave transmitter, and ideally at a HoloNet relay. So if you're at the relay station itself, if you get in, you can transmit a message. So you're not technically hacking, you're more of breaking in, but if you're at that station, then you're able to broadcast your message until you're caught or it's shut down from any other receiver. The HoloNet relay was not really expanded in the Outer Rim because of budgetary concerns. It was very expensive to set up a HoloNet relay, so it was usually only set up on major planets and places where it was worth the cost to set up because of population and size and use and all that. So that's why, if you follow the expanded universe, for example, on Tatooine, where broadcasts were delayed by days or weeks, was because they didn't have a HoloNet relay. So it depends on depended on freighters and pilots coming in or a slower relay to transfer that messages through. The benefit of the HoloNet relay, aside from the speed, though, came into effect or was seen well during the transition from the Republic to the Empire. So when the Republic did become the Empire, large portions of the HoloNet were shut down at the HoloNet station to control messages that were spread throughout the galaxy. The other reason was that it ended up being more of a communications relay for the military, so they wanted to keep control of who had access to the HoloNet. So essentially having that network already set up reduced that cost of having to set up a separate network. So essentially we have control, and then nodes can be enabled or disabled as needed, or if there's a problem I want, it can be shut down, that sort of thing. So it was an easy way to have a infrastructure set up for the military and the Empire to easily transition over to a very secure means of communication. A notable achievement that's not necessarily related to the HoloNet, but is of note, is that the CIS during the time of the Clone Wars was able to create a shadow feed. So what this is that it's essentially an alternative to the Republic's HoloNet. They were able to build a underground network, sort of so to speak, of communications that mimicked what the HoloNet could do, but be used for CIS forces. It was based in Morcana City, so it had a single point of origin and broadcast from there, and it was generally used to spread CIS propaganda. So if anyone wanted to find out what the CIS was doing, you needed essentially a CIS receiver or transceiver or access to the relay in order to get that message. And being that it was a mimic of the HoloNet, it's also generally considered, I presume, to be just as secure and hard to crack. But that is all for that. But a bit of fun fact that I rather enjoyed about or learning about the HoloNet was that something called the Imperial.emp was created based on the HoloNet. Essentially, what this is that it was an email-style service built on the HoloNet for private communications. And it was a service that was possibly even used by Darth Vader. He had his own private channel for communication. So rather than have just a basic direct... So it's kind of like, I guess, rather than having just a Twitter service and then having your direct messages for communications, they had an additional email client built on top of it for more direct communications between individuals that maybe wanted to keep it private or more secure or anything like that. So that is really all for this particular episode. So if you want to check out this or find this more information on this episode or prior episodes, you can visit PatelN01 or geek-io.net for more shows like this and in addition to this show. And check out the sponsors, get the links for the Patreon pages to help to support the shows and the network grow. If you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com or find me on Twitter at PatelN01. And also a bit of an update. Since there's a lot of back and forth going on about Google Plus and what the status of it is. Granted, officially the social network's not going away, but a lot of people are considering that it may be because of last week or more services being taken out of Google Plus that it might be going away. On a personal side note, I figure that they're using the triggers they learn from social media on Google Plus for other services, so it's not going to go away. But in case it does, I figure that I actually am finishing the setup of the Facebook page for Life of an Accounting Droid. By the time the episode releases, it should be all set up. At the moment, I do have the link. It should be facebook.com/lifeofanaccountingdroid, but... So I'll have a link in the show notes, as it should be set up by the time it's ready to, the podcast episode is ready to go out. And I'll have a link on the website as well, so in case you guys want a direct link to it, so you can like the show, interact with the show there as well. In addition to the Google Plus collection, which is at gplus.patelin01.com. So either page, but whichever one you prefer as well. But that is all for this particular episode. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.